At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Bronzed Bears, a special Second City Gridiron podcast series taking a look at the 2024 Pro Football Hall of Fame class. That class features the inclusion of three Chicago Bears. My name is Jeff Berkus, and I've got some fun interviews and insights lined up to talk about Steve McMichael, Devin Hester, Julius Peppers, and a lot of other fun Hall of Fame talk. I will be attending the Hall of Fame game and the induction ceremony in early August with my colleague Jack Silverstein. You will, of course, hear from Jack in this series, and we will do some stuff in Canton, Ohio, and have a little bit of a follow-up. We're going to start off with the senior candidate inductee, Steve McMichael, affectionately known as Mongo. A standout at the University of Texas, McMichael was taken in the 1980 NFL draft as a third-round pick of the New England Patriots. The Texas boy didn't seem to fit in the Patriots' culture, and New England cut him loose after just one season. He played his first game for the Bears in Week 7 in the 1981 season against the Detroit Lions. It would prove to be the first of 191 consecutive games that he would play for the Bears. It's a franchise record. Along the way, McMichael collected two first-team All-Pro selections to go along with two second-team All-Pro seasons, 95 sacks and over 800 tackles at a particularly demanding physical position on the interior of that defensive line. Pro Football Reference, one of my favorite websites, has this great feature on the players page that compares their careers to other players of, quote, a similar quality and shape, end quote. McMichael's career comparisons include names that you're probably going to be pretty familiar with, Ndamukong Suh, Kevin Williams, the great defensive tackle for the Vikings, Howie Long, Jared Allen, Neil Smith, Buck Buchanan, Richard Seymour, Vince Wilfork, and Joe Green. Most of those names are Hall of Famers already or will be added in the near future with Sue and Allen. It's always a little dangerous to get into statistical comparisons, particularly across eras, but I always look at a guy like Warren Sapp, who's a no-doubt first-ballot Hall of Famer. He anchored a defense that won one championship as this penetrating three-technique. Sapp's career started in 1995, 1 year after McMichael retired. Warren Sapp recorded 96.5 sacks in his career, which was just 1.5 sacks more than McMichael. But he also recorded 250 fewer tackles than McMichael. And that's the thing that'll stick out even more once you realize that not only did McMichael record an impressive number of quarterback takedowns, he was also a beast against the run. Sometimes it takes another player's greatness to shine a light on those that came before him. And I wonder if Warren Sapp and eventually Aaron Donald may have helped raise the discourse of the value of an interior disruptor like McMichael. Either way, the NFL senior committee got this one right and putting Mongo in the hall. He was strong, fierce, and intimidating to opponents. He had some gravel in his voice. And honestly, I think if you met him on the street or maybe at the end of a bar on a Tuesday afternoon, you might reasonably assume that his job was breaking rock into gravel. One of the things I think of with McMichael is his entertainment factor after he stopped playing football. He was always good for a quote, and over the years you'd see him pop up in, you know, the Tribune or in local TV, little spots with McMichael because he was just a quote machine. He also, really what made him so successful to be able to go on and have this second career in the WCW, doing some wrestling announcing and then eventually actually doing a little wrestling. He was also a coach of the indoor football team that was a part of Chicago, the Chicago Slaughter. They won a championship. And he was just kind of around the city of Chicago all the time, just providing a level of entertainment for sports in Chicago. I think he's just, quite frankly, an interesting guy and someone that now joins the great names in Chicago Bears history with a bronze bust in Canton, Ohio. And I just think from personality-wise, he's one of my favorite guys that I've learned about. So to help understand McMichael's legacy a little better, I brought in my friend and Second City Gridirons, Bill Zimmerman, and my co-host of Bear and Balance, Lester Wiltfong, to talk a little bit more about McMichael and the other two inductees that we'll get to in later episodes. I'm also going to be clipping in an excerpt of my conversation with Paul Lawrence and Kirk Buckner after my chat with Bill and Lester. Paul and Kirk are colleagues of Jack Silverstein's who work on doing a lot of really cool stuff, deep dives into the Hall of Fame, guys that are maybe on the cusp. And I really wanted to hear their ideas on Steve McMichael, because it's nice to have people that are interested and invested in the Hall of Fame talk about a Bears player who isn't necessarily a Bears fan. And so you know that they're not bringing in a specific bias to the franchise. So you're going to hear more from them at the end of this episode. Let's start off with Bill and Lester. All right. I am joined by Bill Zimmerman and Lester A. Wiltfong Jr. And I want to talk about these Chicago Bears that are going into the Hall of Fame. Let's start off with Steve McMichael. And I really wanted to talk to the two of you guys about Steve McMichael because you guys watched this guy play. Now, you know,
I think we were just called old, Lester.
That was my thought. Yeah.
Experienced, you know, saw it in the moment, you know, but yes, you're a little more seasoned. You saw this guy play. Well, you know, look, I'm 42 years old. I saw Steve McMichael play as a kid. I get it. He was towards the end of his career for the most part when I was watching a lot of Bears games. And this guy just, when you go back and you look at some of the earlier Steve McMichael career, he still looked kind of like an old man playing. Like, he just has a look about him because he had the pants up high and just kind of had like a weathered look to him to begin with. And so he just kind of looked like a grown man real early out of the gates is kind of my impression, McMichael. But what's your earliest football memory of Steve McMichael? Bill, start with you.
Like a specific memory? That's a challenging one. I would say my earliest memories of Steve McMichael are kind of, when I say cartoonish, I don't mean that insulting, because I mean like Steve McMichael was a character. Right. So like the first thing I remember about Steve McMichael in like my childhood, because I am old enough to remember the 85 Bears. I was like 8, 9 years old. I guess I was 8 years old for the 85 Bears. He was the engine of the 85 Bears. He was that personality that drove that entire defense. Doesn't mean he was the best player. I understand there's Richard Dent and Dan Hampton, Singletary. He was one of the top five players on the defense, which is saying something, but he was the engine. He was the personality. He was, you know, the one barking at the dogs, and he was the one pushing the offense and practices and getting in fights with offensive linemen. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that he was just this fierce competitor. And I think a lot of what Steve McMichael did in his career was underappreciated at the time. You know, we didn't hear about, if you're watching football in the 90s, you didn't hear John Madden constantly talking about the importance of collapsing the pocket and getting interior pressure. That's really only something we hear about in the last 10 years. And he was phenomenal at doing that. So my earliest memories for him is about what Steve McMichael was to that defense, his importance, not just his play as an interior defensive lineman, but what he meant for the energy level of that entire defense.
And so I think you're bringing up like all the points that I want to make about McMichael, right? Is that you have I want to talk about the on-field football McMichael and just like what he brought and how great he was. I also want to talk about what he meant as a teammate on that, like you talked about, just that fierceness. And I also want to talk about the character, because he is such a fascinating guy and all of the things that he did after football, right? And I think that you're right, Bill, in that at the time, we may not have appreciated interior pressure and collapsing the pocket, right? And I wonder if this is looking back with a modern lens and looking at this going, why did this guy take so long to get into the Hall of Fame? Why did he not get a sniff of the Hall of Fame when he was on the modern era bracket, right? So I do want to talk about that, but let's start then with the on football stuff. So Lester, on field football, what do you think McMichael brought to this team, and what did that do to that defensive line and what Buddy Ryan wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about, like, these days, you always hear about, you know, Bears fans are used to the three tech. That's the engine of the defense, of the Tampa Tua Lovey, with Coach Flus as well. You know, and like Bill said, I think McMichael, he kind of was that engine of that defense because of stuff, so much stuff he did inside. You know, they'd move guys around quite a bit on that front, obviously a lot of blitzing and stuff. But McMichael was like the one guy that he was always there. He was right there in the middle of that defense. He was penetrating, you know, and you know, man, that attitude. You know, I remember watching him back in the day, and it was like, and I'm older than Bill, so I even go further back, you know, and the 85 Bears was, I was 15 at that time. So, I mean, that was, you know, that was my team. I was just coming into my fandom, really understanding the game a little bit better there. So, you know, the stuff he did on the football field was just, I always watched him like, well, why is he not getting more accolades? I never understood it, even back then as with my young mind, because, you know, it was Samurai Mike, right? It was Dent. It was Wilbur Marshall, you know, the Bermuda Triangle linebackers. Of course, Dan Hampton was a four-time Pro Bowler at a tackle. And McMichael was there. He was the guy racking up tackles. He was the guy consistently racking up sacks, consistently getting pressure. And I just never understood why he wasn't getting more of the pub from like a national level. And, you know, back then there was no social media, there was no YouTube. So I was reading the Tribune, I was reading the Sun Times. I was trying to catch as much highlights as possible. And they seemed to go more for the flashy guys. And McMichael, he had that character to him. And it kind of almost like he was like an afterthought because, oh, he's just the guy he's kind of the asshole of that defense where he's really mouthy. And he is the guy getting in the skirmishes. But from a football standpoint, he was just supremely talented.
Yeah, and I wonder if like lack of draft pedigree may have had something to do with it, right? Not a high draft pick, brought over, like he wasn't originally drafted by the Bears. I wonder if maybe there's some of that that had to do with that slow. There's not that scholarship, piece of that. But Bill, you said something like he's definitely one of the top five greatest players of that 85 defense, and I'm wondering. The Hall of Fame would say, if you go by how long it took these guys to get in, the Hall of Fame would say that it was Singletary, first ballot Hall of Famer. Then they would say Hampton, who I think took a couple of years, then Dent, who took a long time but got in on a modern committee vote. And then they would say McMichael, who is the fourth member of this Chicago Bears defense to get in from that 85 group. Would you agree with that ranking, or would you move any of those guys around?
I think Dent... I mean, I love Dan Hampton, and I love Dan Hampton even more when he was more of a D tackle than a D end. I would think Dent maybe above Hampton, but it's perfectly acceptable. I think Mike Singletary gets kind of knocked nowadays because Mike Singletary was very much of his era. And if you drop right. Mike Singletary in 2021, he's not going to be the same linebacker that he was in the 80s. So that's one of those things. But, I mean, Singletary was really important to that defense. You can't downplay it. And look, and if I was being totally fair and totally honest, not as a career, but 85-86, those two seasons, Wilbur Marshall was a better player than Steve McMichael. That's not a knock on Steve McMichael. Wilbur Marshall was one of the best defensive players in the NFL. In fact, if you like the AAV stat that Pro Football Reference does, he had a year, I don't know if it was with the Bears, it might have been with his like first year with Washington, it was like 86 or 87. He had one of the best years as a defensive player ever, like top five all time with what he was able to do. So Wilbur Marshall was great. So that doesn't knock Steve McMichael. It's just there was that much loaded talent on there. And I don't have the specifics in front of me, but I think it was 83 to 89, I believe. And I've talked to Jack Silverstein about this as well. Steve McMichael from the interior averaged 8.5 sacks per year for like 7 years. That is incredible. Not only that, I think he had two seasons, again, as a defensive tackle, where he was over 100 tackles. I mean, you get 40 tackles out of a defensive lineman. Now you're like, wow, that's a lot of tackles. McMichael's over 100 tackles, 8.5, 9, 10 sacks a year. He was a dominant player. And I think because of some of the players that were around him, he didn't get that recognition. So when you sit there and say, well, Steve McMichael is the fourth or fifth best player on this 85-86 Bears defense, that was a really dominant defense. you could sit there and say, well, then, yeah, you can't have that many players. Like, it's the old Cub argument about the 69 Cubs. You can't have Ron Santo in the Hall of Fame because you already have Billy Williams and Ernie Banks and Fergie Jenkins. And eventually Santo got in because people were eventually like, that's stupid. And it's the same thing with Steve McMichael. Steve McMichael should not be punished because he happened to play with a lot of other talented players. That seemed to happen to him for a while until finally, you know, unfortunately, the ALS certainly had a lot to do with raising his profile again and having the Hall of Fame look at him. But I would say this about that. The Hall of Fame didn't put him in because he had ALS. The Hall of Fame re-examined his career because he had ALS and went, oh, guys, this is an oversight. We need to correct this.
So when I started, I have been a bit of a Hall of Fame junkie for a while, and I started predicting classes, you know, maybe 10, 12 years ago or something like that. Just became part of something I did around football. And of course, being a Bears fan, I really looked at this, like, who are the guys from the past that I think should be in Canton but aren't right now? And when I started doing that, the name Ed Sprinkle and Jimbo Covert and Steve McMichael were my three guys that I would go to. And I would say, those three guys, I don't understand why they're not in. This doesn't make any sense to me. Like, all the numbers are there. Their careers were there. I understand Covert had kind of a shorter peak, had an injury-shortened career. But those are the three guys that I think you could make a really good argument, and I just can't see why they're not in. Those guys are now all in, right? Like, that's kind of the amazing thing over the last few years, that a lot of that's been corrected. But the thing about McMichael was two things. One, I'm viewing his career through a more modern lens because I'm into football now, and I see how important interior defensive lineman is that can rush the passer. And I can see a guy like Warren Sapp who gets in on the first ballot. And I can see the numbers that McMichael put up aren't too far different than what Warren Sapp put up as a first ballot Hall of Famer. And so I can kind of look back on this from the perspective of a modern lens. The other thing is that it just surprises me is that this guy is a Hall of Fame personality. Like, this guy was involved in more than just Chicago Bears football and the 85 defense. This guy has been in our life in a lot of different ways. And Lester, I know you're a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
And Steve McMichael went on to have a wrestling career that I think some of us may not be that familiar with. You want to talk a little bit about the person? And you have to have a big personality to go and do wrestling stuff, I guess, is part of my point here. But tell us about what he did after football.
Yeah, he somehow got a gig as a commentator, and he'd always have his little dog with him. Like, that was like his gimmick. He was always over the top as a commentator. And then, you know, he'd always have a great take. He was funny, obviously, on the mic as well. And, you know, that kind of came from his just, he'd always have something to say. And then eventually he became a member of the Four Horsemen, you know, Ric Flair, you know, all those guys, that the Andersons, you know, it's changed through the years, but McMichael was one of those guys. And, you know, from a pure wrestling standpoint, he was not very good. I mean, if we're being honest, but he was gigantic. He was powerful. You know, he had the name recognition coming in, so that obviously helped him. And you know, he won a couple belts. I think he was the U.S. champ at least on one occasion. I know for sure. Probably had another time there because, you know, those belts always flip around a little bit. But yeah, he was fun. He was a fun personality to watch there. And you know, he knew how to work the crowd. You know, he was always a heel for the most part. When he was in the old WCW, he had his Bears jacket on, you know. So, you know, when he was in Chicago, obviously, you know, he's a Bear, so the fans love him. But he would kind of take a chance to play up his time with Green Bay because, you know, he has to be the heel. You know, back then there was no blurring the lines, right? You're either good guy or bad guy. These days, you know, the guys kind of walk that line. What depends on what they're going to do for the crowd, what the match is. But back then it was, you're the bad guy, you got to say the bad guy. So he was fine doing that too. He played his part perfectly, and he went on to do a lot of other stuff too.
Now, Bill, obviously you've done a lot of work inside radio, and I look at McMichael and that big personality, and I think this guy would have been a perfect shock jock, if nothing else, right? Like, he's willing to just like take a position and kind of twist it a little bit and kind of stick it out there. That powerful voice, you know, the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley Field where he threatened the umpire to come out, yeah, and, you know, after the game, and obviously everybody's going to love that. And
probably the most hated empire of all time, right? That he did that to. And just like things like that, that would happen, that would just sort of increase his Chicago legend, right? Like, you know, to me, is he's just seems like an incredibly important personality for the city of Chicago.
Yeah, he really is, Jeff. And I think you can say Steve McMichael is a Hall of Fame football player. Mongo is a Hall of Fame personality. And that's who I see Mongo as, was like Lester was talking about, the professional wrestler who could cut a great promo in the ring because he didn't care what he said and he knew how to rile up a crowd. He really knew how to play a crowd either direction, what he wanted to do. And like, I was a huge Steve McMichael fan as a kid. Like, I was an offensive lineman mostly, but I wore 76 in high school because Steve McMichael was one of my favorite players. I loved him. And it was that personality, that Mongo guy that just was larger than life. And, you know, in my media career, the first media thing I ever did outside, I went to Syracuse. Outside of Syracuse, is I got an internship in, this is the late 90s, for CBS Chicago. And I met a couple athletes that way. But Steve McMichael was actually the first athlete I ever really had a chance to meet, because I worked for a company called Sporting News Radio in the early 2000s, and the network is under a new name. It's moved a bunch of times. It doesn't matter. But I was doing a weekend show, and the host after the show I was working on was Chet Kopick, the legendary Chicago broadcaster. And Chet knew everybody in Chicago sports, and he was friends with Steve McMichael. So he had Steve McMichael come in studio one day, and McMichael came in towards the end of the show. He's just hanging out in the studio. Lester brought up his dog. His wife was there with the little dog, and he's just shooting the breeze, having fun, giving everyone crap, and just, you would have thought it was just like a guy at the bar that Chet invited to just come into the studio. He was that down to earth and that cool with everybody. It wasn't like, hey, I'm a big time NFL player. So he had that personality where he could just connect with people on a personable level, but he still could be that larger in life character that Chicago embraced.
I mean, is he the correct answer when everybody says, which bear, past or present, do you want to have a beer with?
Yeah, he's not at the top of the list, he's second or third, you know, depending on your flavor. He's right there, because it's not just, he would give you the amazing stories from those 80s locker room. He wouldn't hold back there. He'd give you some fun stories, and he'd also have fun. Now, you better be able to hold your liquor, because I guarantee you Steve wasn't going to let you have one or two beers and walk away.
You know, I think Jack had a good one of his arguments why McMichael should be, you know, considered. Obviously the numbers are great, you know, and like Bill said, he's always knocked for just, oh, he's on the 85 Bears, and you can't have so many players on the same team. Well, the 85 Bears is more than just 85. I mean, the Chicago Bears defense in the 80s through the early 90s with McMichael on it, it was still a top 10 defense. So it wasn't just the 85 Bears. So I think it's unfair that McMichael is kind of knocked for all those years because of the team only winning one. That was a great team, a great defense, and they just couldn't pull it off, you know.
I'll give you one last thing on Steve McMichael that is impressive, especially when you think about it, the fact that he played interior defensive line in the 1980s, which, like, it was a rougher sport then than it is now. I'm not saying it's not a physical sport now, of course it is, but some of the stuff that was done and some of the dirtier play and, you know, stomping on people's ankles, things like that don't really happen today. So Steve McMichael played 6 games with New England in 80, 81 with the Bears. He played 10 games. So 82 was a strike shortened season. He played all 9 games. 83, 84, 85, 86, 16 games, didn't miss any. 87, 12 games, because there was a 4-game strike. So he played every game there. 16 and 88, 89, 90, 91, 92, and 93. The man did not miss a game from 1982 and including 1994 with the Green Bay Packers. 82 to 94, he did not miss a football game at all. He was physical, he was strong, and he was tough as hell. He played through anything. And that is something, I mean, we talk about it here with Tevin Jenkins. We all love Tevin Jenkins. We want Tevin Jenkins to stay a Chicago Bear, but can they extend him? Can they trust him? Because will he be on the field? Steve McMichael was on the field every game.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, that was Bill Zimmerman and Lester A. Wiltfong Jr. talking about Steve McMichael. I think giving some really good stories there and stuff that I had not heard before. So it's always great when Bill brings some of those stories in. We're going to shift over. And again, we're going to talk to Paul Lawrence and Kirk Buckner. Again, I love this conversation. You're going to hear a lot more of this if this series appeals to you and you continue moving on with it. These guys do an incredible job of thinking about and writing about and talking about the Hall of Fame. We're going to have a real deep dive into the current class and the next a prediction series on the next five classes that'll be coming in this series. But for now, please just enjoy the conversation about McMichael with Paul and Kirk. Let's talk about one of the guys that I think has been left behind for quite a while, and that's Steve McMichael. And I want to talk about Steve McMichael, the football player, what happened on the field, and then what happened when he became eligible for the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a modern era candidate. When I started looking at the Hall of Fame, when I started studying it, trying to get into it and understand, you know, who were maybe the Chicago Bears that weren't in that maybe deserved to be. One of the guys was Ed Sprinkle. That was corrected in 2020. Jim Covert was on my short list, and he got in 2020 as well with that, you know, big class that happened that pushed through a lot of senior candidates. But the one guy that I never really could understand why he didn't get more traction was Steve McMichael. And I'm curious, from a historical perspective, was McMichael overshadowed by Mike Singletary, Dan Hampton, Richard Dent? Was there this idea that there was a maximum number that a team that played together could maybe have in? Because his numbers kind of speak for themselves. So what is it that McMichael faced in terms of his barriers to entry to the Hall? And Kirk, do you mind if I start with you?
Yeah, actually, I think a lot of it is what you just sort of said initially. This, we've seen this before with a lot of players. LC Greenwood, for example, in Pittsburgh, although he did become a finalist, when Steve was eligible as a modern, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he ever even was considered as a semifinalist. Yeah, that's what I thought. So I think it's that's a giant part of that. And there always seems to be players that just fall off for reasons that we can't figure out. We've talked about Neil Smith in our group a lot. Like, that's another name that, again, has never seen the semis. And, you know, you can't really figure out why. And sometimes it's just a mystery. And I think what really is one thing that I'd like to see change in the Pro Football Hall of Fame is just rotating people who actually get to decide who votes through. And I think if that were to happen, you might see different people sort of come up, because when the semis come out, it's going to be the same group of people generally. And just unfortunately, when some guy, in this case, Mongo, gets forgotten about, then he's forgotten again and again and again and again and again.
So Paul, from your perspective, is this also a statement about defensive tackles maybe getting a little bit of a look backwards, and the prominence of a penetrating three technique defensive tackle in the modern game and how important that is? You know, like a guy like Aaron Donald, who really can kind of take over a game as that interior defensive lineman, maybe shining a little bit more of a spotlight on guy. You look back and you say, oh wait, Warren Sapp got in on the first ballot, but yet here's Steve McMichael, who has numbers that are pretty similar to Warren Sapp. You know, what happened here? Is there something about the modern play at the defensive tackle spot that maybe helped McMichael here?
No, I think you're on to something there. Certainly, as players in certain positions that have certain particular roles as the game is evolves, it does shine light on the others that preceded them that may have not have that kind of focus or attention. And if you look at the trends in the history of voting and the patterns based on what the voters tend to look for, there certainly are positions that are, I hate to say, sort of devalued. And, you know, a couple of them that come to mind, and there's very few of them in the Hall of Fame, are tight ends. Offensive guards and centers tend to be very small in number. For many years, we were well underrepresented in the safety position. And I think the interior defensive tackle situation you're talking about, it was another one of those. There's also a factor here that, at least in the last, say, two decades, and the voting committee has expanded in number and diversity up to 50 now. There has been some changes. But one of the things that seems to be pretty clear, again, just from a trend, is that the voters really put a high value on all-decade team selections. That seemed to be a golden ticket, especially if you're a first team. It may take a player a few years in the ballot, but they tend to get in. And or often combined with that would be somebody with multiple first-team all-pro selections by Associated Press or the other major news outlets that select those teams. These voters really focus on those players. I think if you look at many of the classes in recent years, whether they were senior elected as senior candidates or modern candidates, those two criteria push a lot of guys up to the top, either as first ballot or, again, may take a few years. But what that means in the case of someone like Mongo is not having those two kind of criteria or checklist on a resume. It's no discredit to his career, but it kind of almost moves him into a tier. He gets set aside. And the problem is more and more guys get set aside. And as the years go down, they have 20 years on the ballot as a modern candidate. And if they don't start making progress into the semifinalist round, which he never managed to get to that round, they suddenly get disappeared and forgotten. And then they fall into what we call the senior pool abyss, where there are dozens and dozens of guys. Some of them have waited decades, like Randy Gradishar and last year Chuck Howley, almost 40 years waiting to get elected. And I think he's a case where that's happened. It's not really a discredit. I think it's just he gets – and he's not the only one that happens to you. They sort of get forgotten by the voters. And as the voters get younger, which is another trend, how many of them really, unless they're historians, and most of them are journalists, they follow the game. Some of them will write the history. But as we go forward, more and more of them probably didn't see guys from the 70s, or even maybe now we're getting some of these voters who aren't as familiar with the early 80s. And so names just disappear from their mind, I think.
Right. Or maybe they come in towards the tail end of their career and they only like remember that sort of that last year or two where a guy may not be in that Hall of Fame type character. Kirk, I'm curious, what does this say about the 85 Bears defense? Now that, you know, that strong middle 80s defense where you have yet another guy recognized in the Hall of Fame. Now, does that put them into some kind of elite territory? And I'm sure they were already in elite territory, but does this put them in to sort of like really crystallize, like, hey, this was a heck of a defense?
I think they're already in that discussion of the greatest team of all time. I mean, and I thought that before, and I say that from the external, non-Chicago perspective. I think probably the best thing that ever happened to them that year was losing to Miami. And that just took a lot of pressure off. Yeah, I think it puts that final ribbon, that bow on that already near perfect package, the way I sort of look at it. Historically speaking, we all know what we saw. We witnessed it. We lived through it. Our eyes told us that this team was special. As Paul and myself, especially as we're doing more of these looks at games in the 80s and just these powerful teams. Yeah, Chicago only won one, but you put that team against any team in that decade, my money's on Chicago every single time. And it's sort of great that another piece of that puzzle is getting in.
All right, that's the first episode of The Bronze Bears on Steve McMichael. Join us next time as we talk about Devin Hester, and then we will eventually get to Julius Peppers and some other really cool Hall of Fame talk. Really appreciate you joining us, and let me know what you think on Twitter at GridironBorn or on the website at Windy City Gridiron. Thanks, guys. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.